Had I ever thought that Dez's love would be stifling? That it would coddle me like a security blanket? Because this isn't stifling or coddling. It's dangerous and all-consuming, and right now it leaves a taste in my mouth like blood and smoke. I'm sure. Behind us, Malachi throws up his hands. Dez nods to me, his face foreboding.
Follow my lead and keep yourself safe. That's an order.
His wings unfurl behind him, blossoming like some twisted, thorny flower. In response, my own wings stretch wide. With a burst of magic, he leaps into the night air, his wings propelling him up. My own takeoff isn't nearly so graceful, but several seconds later, I too am airborne, trailing after the king of the night, Malachi at my back. I don't see what caused the commotion until well after Malachi, Dez, and I have joined up with Dez's soldiers. Far below the floating island of Somnia, on the main landmass that makes up the other world, a massive fireball is unfolding, thick, inky plumes of smoke already rising from it. Flakes of smoldering ash drift around us the closer we get. I squint down at the flames as the smoke burns my eyes. My brows furrow. Right in the center of the inferno, right where I'd assumed the heat would be the hottest and the fire would burn the brightest, there's a blackened pathway that the flames don't dare touch. One of the guards points to something along the singed trail, and I follow his finger. There, amidst the charred earth, are what appear to be two figures. It's not until we're about 100 feet away from the ground that I recognize one of them. Well, fuck me good. Temperance Temper Darling, my best friend and colleague, is marching among the blaze like she controls it, dragging a very frightened-looking fairy along with her. Her dark eyes glow like coals, bolts of electricity snapping from her. Uh-oh. She's officially lost control of her power. I've only ever seen her like this 2 other times, and neither ended well. Around me, I can feel fey magic building in the air. I don't know if it's all coming from Dez, or if his soldiers are also adding to it, but throwing power at Temper when she's like this only ever leads to one thing. Destruction. I glance over at Dez, who's studying Temper. There's no recognition on his face, and why should there be? For all I've told him of her, he hasn't actually met Temper in the flesh. Sometimes I assume my mate is omnipotent and infallible, that he knows everything and everyone at every moment in time, that nothing can truly sneak up on him. But it can, and it obviously has. He begins signaling to his men, who adjust their positions, their bodies tense and ready. If I don't do something now, they're going to firebomb my friend, and that's going to end badly for everyone. Coming to a hasty decision, I tuck my wings close to my back. My body dips, beginning to dive for the earth.
Stop!
Someone shouts behind me. There's no way I'm stopping. I glance over my shoulder. My eyes meet Dez's, and for a moment all we do is lock eyes. Right now, I'm neither following his lead nor keeping myself safe like he instructed. He has every reason to use his magic to stop me in my tracks, but he doesn't. That small show of faith bolsters my own courage. There's no way for me to communicate to him that this woman is actually my best friend or that I might be the only one who can salvage the situation before someone gets hurt. The only thing I can do is nod to Dez. I know what I'm doing. I will him to understand. Even though he can't read my thoughts, I think he must glean them from my face. He stares at me for another moment, and then he puts up a fist. In response, his soldiers hold steady, their bodies still poised. That's all I have time to notice before I face forward again. Beneath me, Temper stares up at the group of us, her normally warm eyes foreign and blistering as they land on mine. This is the Temper that people feared at our boarding school, and here is the power that ostracized her. The terrifying reality of her existence, the one she stares down each morning when she wakes up and closes her eyes to each night, is that she is capable of this carnage. She's capable of it, and a part of her craves it. There is a seductive power that she can tap into, and it lures her in whenever it can. Most days she tells it to fuck off. Today she gave into it. I know what the soldiers looking down at Temper are wondering. It's the same question that's plagued many of our clients. What is she? I stare at my friend through the haze, the heat waves making her form shimmer and bend. There's only one type of supernatural whose magic is this powerful, this frightening, this intoxicating. A sorceress. Chapter 16. Temper and I stare at each other across the expanse of space, her skin sparking as magic dances along it. Her brimstone eyes and electric skin are a world away from her normal, expressive self. My friend is a rare breed of supernatural, and one most people should hope to never encounter. Sorcerers and sorceresses wield magic like witches, but unlike witches, they have a nearly limitless amount of power they can tap into on a whim. The only trouble is, every time they use their magic, it eats away at their conscience until there is nothing left. Using small amounts here and there makes no real difference, but power like this, it can cleave away large bits of Temper's morality. The worst part of the whole thing is that Temper's power coaxes her to use it the same way my siren coaxes me to give into my own inner darkness. It's always there, waiting for a moment of weakness. My friend came for me. I disappeared, and she hunted me down, working herself up into a frenzy until her power swallowed her whole. She gave up a bit of her morality for me. It's a totally messed up show of friendship, but one that moves me nonetheless. I begin to lower myself to the ground, the heat and smoke of the inferno suffocating.
Callie.
I sense more than hear Dez's voice in the sky above me. I glance up at him from where he and his men linger in the sky several dozen feet away from me. His expression says it all. He's not okay with me getting closer. Not one bit. And he's getting ready to intervene. I turn away from him. Temper is my biggest concern. She watches me the entire time I descend, the fairy she holds struggling to get away despite the fact that he's definitely not going anywhere. I land on the smoldering ground, the heat like an oven around us.
You grew wings,
she says, her voice toneless. Not hi, not how are you, or why haven't you called? Just, you grew wings. Temper's as far gone as I've ever seen her.
That motherfucker made you grow wings,
she says, the heat around me rising with her voice. Her gaze moves from me to Dez. She shoves the fairy she's holding away from her, nearly managing to chuck him into the fire. He staggers away from the blaze just in time, and then he's bolting, taking to the sky, muttering all sorts of obscenities that Temper doesn't hear. Her wrath is focused on my mate. Whatever you're thinking, Temper, don't, I say, my voice low. If she touches a hair on Dez's head, then, friend or not, I'm taking her down. Temper's attention swings back to me, her eyes thinning menacingly. She tilts her head, trying to figure me out.
What has he done to you?
It's obvious she thinks that I'm the crazy one. On a whim, I take a step forward. Put out the flames, release your magic, and I'll explain everything. Her eyes still look as alien as ever, and those little bolts of lightning are still jumping from her skin, but I swear I'm getting through to her. But then she smiles at me, and it's positively sinister.
What if I don't want to?
There it is, the monster that consumes Temper. My siren surfaces, illuminating my skin.
Don't make me glamour you,
I state, my voice menacing.
You wouldn't dare, she says.
She's right. In any other situation, I wouldn't. For one thing, I'm pretty sure she can overpower my glamour. For another, I've never wanted to be on the receiving end of her fury. But right now, things are different. He's not my betrothed, Temper. He's my soulmate. I never had the chance to tell her. It's an explanation of sorts, that I'm not being held here against my will and that I will stop her if she tries to hurt my mate. For one long moment, Temper doesn't react at all. Then, slowly, her eyes drift up to the bargainer, her face expressionless. In the sky, more fairies have joined him, Not all from his kingdom by the looks of them, either. Temper's gathering a crowd, and if this doesn't end soon, either my friend is going to get hurt, or a bunch of innocents are. Temper's gaze returns to me.
"He's your soulmate," she states, her voice almost trance-like.
I nod, my skin still bright.
"Protect our mate," my siren whispers, cajoling me to glamour my friend.
I keep my mouth adamantly shut. Temper closes her eyes and I tense. For all I know, she's about to ignite the skies and every fairy that's in them. I could stop her right now. All it would take is a little of my own magic. I have every reason to do so, and my siren wants it badly. But I don't. Dez gave me the benefit of the doubt only minutes ago. I can do the same for Temper. So I hold my tongue and wait for her to act. My friend's eyes snap open, and all at once the flames of the explosion extinguish, as though they were nothing more than birthday candles being blown out. Temper's iris is dim, and the glowing red lines that streak through them now begin to recede. Her skin stops sparking, and that hot, overbearing power of hers finally reels itself in. One moment she's a savage sorceress, and the next she's just my friend. She lets out a faltering breath.
"Girl," she exhales, "it's fucking good to see you."
That's all I need to hear. I close the last of the space between us, wrapping Temper up in a hug. Her skin feels like sun-baked sand under my touch.
"You're going to tell me about the wings," she says as we hug, "and that you're a soulmate and how the hell you ended up here. Then and only then can I promise you that I won't fry your boyfriend's ass."
Now that the imminent danger is gone, I can hear the drumming of my pulse. What would have happened if I hadn't come along with Dez? What would have happened if Temper hadn't listened to my pleas? I squeeze her tighter.
"Fair enough," I say into her shoulder.
Around us, fairies are beginning to drop to the earth, cautiously creeping closer. I don't know how many seconds we have left to ourselves. I pull away from her.
"I can't believe you blew up a portal to the other world."
"Bitch, that's just called making an entrance."
Chapter 17. Several hours later, after many death threats, both to and from Temper, a near incarceration and a whole lot of explaining, Temper and I are with Dez and Malachi in one of the bargainer's private rooms. Temper crosses her heels over the armrest of the wing-back chair she's in, her back resting against the other armrest.
"So let me get this straight. You two," she points to me and Dez, "are soulmates, but you couldn't get together for a stupidly long time because this one,"
now she points to me,
"made some mad-ass wish, and right after you both finally got together, she," me again, "was thrown into a fey prison, and some psycho king decided to give her wings,
and scales and claws,
and then you," she points to Dez, "off that motherfucker, but now you," me again, "are stranded here."
"She's not stranded here," Dez says darkly.
He sits in another chair, his forearms resting heavily on his thighs. Temper harumphs.
"Like she can just waltz her feathery ass around L.A.?"
Malachi steps forward.
"Why don't we talk about the more pressing issue at the moment? You obliterated one of the Fauna Kingdom's portals and held a fairy hostage."
Temper folds her arms, eyeing the fairy up and down.
"If you want an apology, you're looking at the wrong girl, compadre."
A knock on the door interrupts the conversation. Dez waves his wrist and the door opens. The fairy on the other side bows.
"My king," he says. "Lord, ladies."
He dips his head to each of us before returning his attention to Dez.
"There are Fauna Fae soldiers at the palace gates. They're demanding the sorceress's arrest."
And that marks another attempt at incarceration. Dez rubs his chin.
"I refuse to hand her over," he says. "My king," the fairy begins, "the sorceress is an honored guest and thus has my protection and that of my kingdom," he says.
His eyes flick to mine.
"Any damages her arrival has incurred will be paid in full from my personal coffers."
My breath catches. He's so obviously doing this for me. Just when I thought it was impossible to love him more, Malachi's eyebrows go up. He assesses Temper, who's giving him a look like she wouldn't mind getting a taste of him for dinner. The fairy standing in the doorway hesitates, then bows.
Very well. I'll let them know.
After the door closes, the room falls into silence. Finally, Temper clears her throat.
I suppose you want me to say thank you, she says, picking at a stray piece of lint on the chair.
The fact that Dez offered Temper his protection, I'm not sure he realizes that's kind of a big deal for her. Temper is used to being judged and condemned, not given the benefit of the doubt.
Now you must make a showing at Solstice, Malachi interrupts. You're going to need to prove to the other kingdoms that you're still a faithful ally. Otherwise, this could mark the beginnings of war.
Dez rubs his face. For once, he seems like a weary king. Sensing that he has sway over Dez, the Lord of Dreams steps forward.
If you attend Solstice and show them that you are the same ruler you've always been, it will go a long way to cooling tensions.
Dez doesn't say anything for a minute, just ponders Malachi's words. Those hypnotic silver eyes of his meet mine. I can tell he's torn between protecting me and protecting his kingdom. It shakes me to my core to matter that much to someone. I don't need protecting, I say.
From these fairies you might,
Dez mutters. Finally, reluctantly, he nods.
All right, I'll go. We'll all go.
His eyes sweep over the room, touching on Malachi, then me, then, shockingly, Temper. She's coming too? Temper looks pleased.
Sounds good to me. Consider me this one's rib, she says, jerking her chin in my direction.
It hits me. Really hits me then. Dez means to take me and a hot-headed sorceress to a place where mortals are slaves. We'll have to respect their archaic laws, laws that subjugate humans. I suppress a swallow. What have we gotten ourselves into? Chapter 18.
Girl, give it to me straight. What the hell is going on? Temper asks.
The two of us stand inside her guest suite. Like the rest of the Night Kingdom's palace, this room has a Moroccan feel to it with arched doorways, tiled columns, and hanging lanterns. I lean back against the door.
What do you mean? I say.
She begins to poke around the room.
Seems an awful lot like you're getting comfortable here while you test drive your fairy prince.
I am getting comfortable with this realm and my mate, something that the old Callie would have not been chill with. In her eyes, the other world was too frightening and Dez too flighty.
What do you want me to do, Temper? You said it yourself earlier, I can't just head back to Earth.
I gesture to my wings. I'm a freak.
Freak.
The word tastes like a lie when it leaves my lips. Maybe it's all the things I've discovered I can do. Maybe it's that everyone in this realm looks a bit like me. Or maybe it's that the King of the Night seems to think that I'm perfect even with all these additions. Somewhere along the way, I decided that different no longer equaled bad.
There are ways to undo what happened to you, Temper says.
Something uncomfortable slides through my stomach. To undo Karnon's magic? How many times have I wished for these scales on my forearms to disappear, for my black nails to return to their normal fleshy color, for my wings to disappear? It's a familiar feeling. There was a time I wished to wash away my flesh and live in someone else's skin. I'm only now accepting that I want this skin, imperfections and all. And Temper is suggesting that I can get rid of those imperfections. That I should. I don't expect to be hurt by the offer, but I am, just a little. I want her to accept all of me the way Dez has. I don't want to undo it, I say.
Temper stops poking around to arch a sculpted eyebrow my way. Seriously?
Self-consciously, I reach around and drag the edge of one of my wings forward, the dark, iridescent feathers shimmering. Releasing my wing, I sigh.
Is that so hard for you to believe?
Girl, you and I both know that you can't come back to Earth looking like you do. Don't you want to come home?
You have a whole life waiting for you.
A lonely, empty life. That's not to say that I want to abandon it, but I don't also want to have to change myself in order to return to that life. I open my mouth to tell her this, but then I stop myself. I'm not going to defend myself to her. She's supposed to have my back the way I've had hers in the past. That's the way our friendship has always worked. I shake my head. Forget about it. I turn to leave.
Wait.
She heads back over to me and catches my wrist. Callie, you know I only care if you care. Her warm brown eyes search mine. It's just that I know how much you didn't want to be a werewolf when you were with Eli, and now after being with another guy for 3.5 seconds, you look like a fairy. I give her an exasperated look. I haven't been with him for 3.5 seconds. She squeezes my hand a little tighter, reading my features.
Fine, she says, making some judgment call. You have a long and sordid history with him. I just don't like sharing my best friend, even if the dude's her mate.
And there's the truth behind Temper's trepidation. My friend feels threatened. For as long as we've been friends, no one else has come between us. And as far as she knows, Dez is the same guy that made me jaded towards men, so she's also anti-Dez because she's loyal. And here I am asking her to let go of her anger and jealousy. It's all I have to ask for, and she's willing to work on it for me. I pull my hand out of her grip so that I can give her a hug. I love you, you crazy chick, I say. Her arms come around me a second later.
I know. How could you not? I blew up a portal for you.
Right there, in the middle of the hug, I begin to laugh.
I still can't believe you did that. And the look on that fairy's face, I say, referring to the fairy she held hostage.
That dude probably needed a new change of pants after the experience.
You mean my guide, she says. That's what he gets for overcharging me.
Now the both of us begin to crack up, and it's so messed up, but the two of us are a little sick in the head. Temper pulls away, her laughter trailing off.
Okay, now where do these fairies keep the liquor? She asks, glancing around the room. I'm going to need to get trashed if I'm to stay here in the motherfucking other world.
I thought you were all about fairies, I say, moving deeper into her room.
Yeah, back when I was 17. I was also all about orange lipstick then, too.
She shudders at the memory, kneeling in front of a hutch pressed to the side of the room.
Aha, she says, opening its doors. Here we are.
She grabs a bottle with shimmery lettering. Uncorking it, she gives it a sniff. She winces a little.
Ugh, smells like leprechaun piss, but it'll do.
Not even going to ask about the leprechaun comment. She takes a swig straight from the bottle before offering it to me. I wave it away.
So,
she flops down on an ornate side chair. Malachi. She stretches out his name, waggling her eyebrows. I groan, falling onto her bed.
No.
No
what?
She says, some sass entering her voice. I grab one of her pillows, tucking it under my chest. I already know how this will play out.
You're going to screw him, then screw him over, and then he's going to be huffy and he'll take it out on me because I'm your best friend.
She gives me the side eye, taking a swig from her bottle. It would serve you right, you skinny little shit. I've had to deal with Eli since you broke things off with him, and that hairy motherfucker has had a bone to pick with me. Pun unintended.
Oops, Temper has a point.
Our business, West Coast Investigations, contracted some of our work out to Eli, who was a supernatural bounty hunter. I assumed that our relationship, or lack thereof, wouldn't affect our work. Clearly, I assumed wrong.
So,
Temper continues, does he have a girlfriend?
Eli?
I lift a shoulder. I wouldn't know.
Bitch, you and I both know I ain't talking about Eli. Malachi!
Poor fairy. Seems he's going to have more to do with Temper in the coming days, whether he wants to or not. She's a force of nature when she wants to be.
No clue, I say.
I don't even know if fairies have girlfriends or boyfriends. They seem like the kind of creatures to have courtships rather than dates, and betroths rather than significant others. And apparently, if you're a ruler, harems. I suppress my shudder. Temper takes another swig from the bottle, completely oblivious to where my mind is at. The urge to drink rises in me. Damn Dez for forcing me to be sober. I could use a little liquor for this conversation.
Is the eye patch real?
She asks. I just give Temper a look. It is, isn't it? She says this like it's some kind of great revelation. I want to see what's under it.
Has anyone told you that you're seriously disturbed? Says the girl who loves to fuck bad men.
How is the bargainer in bed? I bet the dude is grade A nasty. I could definitely use a little liquor for this conversation. Temper, I don't want to kiss and tell.
What? You always kiss and tell.
That was back when the men didn't matter and it was fun to laugh about some of the sexual situations I got myself into. But intimacy with Dez, it feels different. Sacred.
It's the best I've ever had, I admit primly. And that's all I'm going to say.
Temper eyes me over the bottle.
Shit. And here I thought this guy was a bad influence. Oh, he's still a bad influence, I say, my eyes going distant.
Dez might be my soulmate, but he's still the man that tricks me into jumping off buildings, who kills remorselessly, who uses sex to collect repayment.
Whatever you say.
The two of us talk for a bit more. It's only once the alcohol hits Temper's system and makes her sleepy that I tuck her into bed and steal away from her room. I spend an extra few seconds quietly closing her door.
You have some explaining to do.
I cover my mouth to muffle my yelp. Leaning against the hallway wall is Dez. He strides towards me, and like a fool, I begin to back up. When his eyes glint the way they do now, I can tell he's right on the edge that separates sanity and madness, humanity and his fey cruelty. He's on me in an instant, pinning me to the wall.
Let's try this again, he says, nipping my ear. You have some explaining to do.
He presses a leg between mine, the movement rubbing against my core.
Now, do you want to start with the fact that you did not listen to my instructions when we were on the balcony earlier, or the fact that you nearly got yourself killed by facing down an angry sorceress?
I swallow delicately. I knew this was coming.
I could have...
His voice breaks.
I could have lost you,
he says harshly.
If you had been hurt, I wouldn't have even had time to administer lilac wine.
This is where I apologize for frightening him, and it's where I thank him for his faith in me. Only I never get the chance. Dez's face bricks itself up until the suave, cunning bargainer stares back at me.
Or perhaps,
Dez continues,
we should just skip the explanations and move on to repayment.
Repayment? Suddenly the bargainer no longer has me pinned to the wall. He lifts first one of my legs, then the other, wrapping them securely around his waist. Dez, I say, now beginning to get nervous. Just what exactly does he have in mind? He begins to walk, holding me to him.
Let's try listening to instructions all over again. This time, when I give them to you, you're going to follow them.
I narrow my eyes at him. What are you planning? He flashes me a dark, smoldering look.
You'll see soon enough, Cherub.
He heads up the hallway and down another, all the while I'm pinned in his arms. I don't bother trying to squirm away, mostly because I know he wants me to, and also because last time I tried to get out of this position, he used his magic on me. So instead, I let him carry me. I'm no featherweight.
If he wants to exhaust himself lugging me around, he can be my guest.
Eventually, he kicks open a set of double doors leading out to yet another one of the palace's many balconies. Cool evening air blows in at my back, ruffling my feathers and stirring my hair. If you toss me off the balcony, I warn. He doesn't wait for me to finish my threat. One moment he's on solid ground, the next the two of us are spiraling into the air, me still in his arms.
So Dez isn't planning on tossing me from a balcony, he's planning on dropping me from the sky.
Only he doesn't let me go. I stare him in the eye, the two of us locked together. What now? I ask. His eyes glitter. That's about the time I feel my clothes loosen, just as they did in Leffy's. What in the...
My fey attire essentially melts off my body. I let out a squeak, trying to grab at the remnants of my clothes. It's no use. They slip through my fingers like grains of sand. Good thing I'd already stowed away my daggers, otherwise Dez's little gift would be long gone. I glance below us, watching the shimmering fabric fall down to Somnia. Already we're too high up to see where it lands. The night air caresses my bare skin. It feels like skinny dipping, the sensation strange and new and not altogether unpleasant. I'd be embarrassed over the exposure, except we're too high in the sky and the night is too dark for anyone to see us. I turn back to Dez, my flesh bare. Like me, his clothes have long since peeled away. I run a hand over his bicep, my thumb tracing one of his war cuffs. We slip through a layer of wispy clouds, the mist prickling my flesh. It's the clouds that remind me of the first time I flew. Dez had pointed out the couples hidden in the darkness, each caught in a lover's embrace. I suck in a breath, realizing what Dez means to do, what we mean to do. Of course the king of the night, the man who rules over sex and sleep, violence and chaos, means to take me up here, where only the stars and the great vastness of the universe are our audience.
I told you I had many, many demands, he says,
reading my thoughts. His voice is soft as the two of us hover in the heavens, our hair rustling in the gentle breeze. As he speaks, I can feel his magic settling around us. It's not pushy or uncomfortable like it sometimes can be. Rather, I feel as though I'm bathing in Dez's essence, shadows and moonbeams. Slowly, his hands slide down my back. They feel like a sculptor's touch, molding me into some pleasing form. They slip under the backs of my thighs. My hands are clasped loosely around Dez's neck, and I play with the soft ends of his hair. I thought you wanted me to follow your instructions, I say, my breath a whisper. He lifts my body up just a few inches and then slides me onto him. My lips part as I stare at him, my skin beginning to glow. I look like just another star in the sky as our flesh meets.
I do, he says, nuzzling my cheek. But I find I prefer you a bit untamed, too.
With that, the two of us begin to move, our bodies quickly turning feverish. And we spend the night as just two more lovers hidden amongst the clouds. Chapter 19. The next day, Dez and I are back out in the training yard, me a little bedraggled from my evening, Dez looking just as sharp as always. If I thought that after the closeness of last night the bargainer would go easy on me today, then I thought wrong. I clutch my brand spanking new daggers in my hands, feeling every inch the amateur as Dez comes at me.
Block! Block!
He barks out as he begins his attack. My arms come up belatedly, just barely holding him back.
My flank is open, Callie, he says.
How am I? He spins out of my grip and then I feel the press of his blade against my neck.
How many times have I killed you today?
He asks, his breath warm against my cheek. 23. He's been making me count, like I don't already feel supremely shitty about my combat skills. He clicks his tongue.
You can do better.
I don't want to do better. I want to go back inside the palace, find the royal kitchens, pillage them of their pastries, and then take a nice long nap. But wishes, I've decided, are little bastards that always bite you in the ass. At least if you get them from the bargainer. Dez swipes out, knocking one of my blades from my grip, the metal clattering against the ground. Okay, seriously, my suckiness is starting to piss me off.
Your blade is an extension of your arm, Dez says, beginning to circle me. You wouldn't let someone cut off your hand. Don't let someone divest you of your weapon.
I lunge for my fallen dagger, just barely missing another swipe of my mate's weapon as I roll out of the way.
Finally, my siren shows potential.
What I would give for you to be quiet, I mutter. Much as I love his voice, there's something particularly unpleasant about receiving instruction from someone you're sleeping with.
You would give me something?
Dez says, looking intrigued.
Cherub, I'm always open to that sort of bargain.
Beyond Dez, Malachi and Temper exit the palace, heading right for our training grounds. Never have I been so happy to see them. Surely this will get me out of training for the day. The tip of Dez's blade is suddenly poking my breastbone, his silver eyes intense.
Don't take your eyes off your enemy for a second.
Temper and Malachi are here, I say, nodding to them.
Good,
he says, not turning from me.
Perhaps you can impress them with your skill.
We're not stopping. Suddenly, Temper's presence is feeling a whole lot less welcome. I don't want everyone and their mother watching my ass get handed to me. I sort of have a reputation to maintain. There are also the tatters of my dignity to consider. I'd like to keep those. Over Dez's shoulder, I can just make out my friend giving Malachi fuck-me looks. Dez swipes my feet out from under me. I land on my hip, my weapons clattering out of my hands.
Concentrate,
he growls. You'd think for a dude who got repeatedly laid last night, he'd be in a slightly better mood. I scramble for my daggers just as he kicks one out of the way. Screw this, seriously. Bitch, Temper calls out. I know you can give better than that. I throw her a nasty look, but it's a wasted one. She's already moved on, leaning into Malachi and whispering something to him that makes him laugh. I'm pretty sure it's at my expense, too. The bargainer swats my butt with his weapon, making me instantly livid.
If you don't like the way I talk to you, then show me.
I grab my remaining dagger and lash out, the tip of my blade cutting through the leather covering Dez's calves. He pauses, his eyes flicking to the tear in his protective gear. Suddenly, a smile breaks out along his face.
Well done,
he says, sliding his weapon back into its sheath.
I'll make a warrior out of you yet.
He reaches for my hand.
Training's officially over for the day.
I give his hand a skeptical look before taking it, half thinking this is another trick. But it isn't. Apparently I get to finish training early if I make progress. Score. Aw, you guys are done already? Temper asks, sauntering over with Malachi. As if she even cares about me ending practice. She's just bummed that her impromptu date with the Lord of Dreams is coming to a swift end.
Don't look so sad, Temperance, Dez says. I have plans for the both of you.
The both of us? I flash him a quizzical look, my belly squeezing uncomfortably.
You two are going to spend the day getting ready for solstice.
Fuck this shit, Temper says to me.
The two of us are locked away in the royal dressmaker's shop, a series of fairies taking our measurements and holding swatches of cloth up to our faces. The air is thick with the scent of sandalwood and burning oil. We've already gotten our nails, or in my case, claws, filed and our hair trimmed.
I mean, seriously, fuck it.
The fairy measuring her sniffs. I only barely manage to contain my smile at Temper's utter disdain. I thought you liked getting primped up, I say. Lord knows Temper's always going on about improvements I could be making to my own wardrobe.
Yeah, I like it when I do it myself. It only takes 5 minutes, and most importantly, I don't have to strip down to my lacy bits while some random fairy paws at me. Ow!
Temper yelps as said random fairy sticks her with a pin.
Bitch, did you do that on purpose?
She gives the fairy the evil eye. Perhaps if you stopped moving, the woman says.
I've been holding still for an hour. I'm not a goddamn statue.
Another fairy intercedes.
My lady, we are terribly sorry for the inconvenience. We're working as fast as we can.
Ignoring the second fairy, Temper says to the first, prick me again, and I'll smite your little pixie ass. The tailor working on me pats my arm.
All finished,
he whispers, letting me step off the pedestal I've been standing on.
Oh, hell no, Temper squawks when she sees I'm done. Really? You're done before me? How is that fair? I'm not even an important part of this solstice shindig.
Calm down, Temper, I say, heading over to our things. You'll be done soon enough and I'll be right here.
Actually, my lady, the tailor interrupts, the king has asked that you join him once you're finished.
You are not leaving me,
Temper demands. I shrug my shoulders, gathering my things. King's orders, I say. I can't disobey them. I head for the door.
Callie!
I slip out of the dressmaker's shop before she can finish making her demands. Do I feel bad running out on temper? Not nearly as bad as I do for the fairies that have to finish attending her. She can be a dragon when she wants to be. Outside, a soldier waits for me.
My lady,
he bows.
I'm here to escort you to the king.
I nearly roll my eyes. Of all the pomp. The two of us wind our way through the palace grounds, heading to one of the towers. The soldier stops at an ornately carved wooden door that's braced with bronze fittings. He knocks twice on the door, then, bowing again to me, moves into formation against the hallway wall. Silently, the door swings open and I step inside. It's another library. A tower library, judging by the curving walls of books. Several tables take up the center of the room, and on one is a stack of tomes, a partially painted canvas, an abandoned set of paints, and a paintbrush. But no Night King. I head over to the table, my footfalls echoing throughout the room. Curious, I pick up the canvas. At first, all I make out is the curve of a waist, the indent of a belly button, and the beginnings of a dusky nipple. But then I notice the forearm laying languorously near the corner of the painting, distinct for its rows and rows of golden scales. I nearly drop the painting. This is me. Naked. Sure, it doesn't show my face, but it doesn't need to. There's only one person I know of who has scales on their forearm. Me. This is so obviously Dez's doing. I take in the painting again, and oh my God, there's my nipple! My nipple! He'd been in the midst of painting it in when he was called away from his work. And the fiend isn't even here for me to confront him. My eyes move to the pots of paint. On a whim, I grab the paintbrush and dip it into a pot containing black paint. Once I've coated the brush, I begin systematically blacking out the painting. Do I feel guilty about ruining good art? Not as guilty as I feel about walking out on temper, which is to say, not guilty at all. After I finish, I set the wet canvas aside, my hands now covered in smudges of black paint. Satisfied at my own form of payback, I move on from the canvas to the stack of books. A note sits on top of the stack. Calypso, in case you wanted a little extra knowledge on solstice, Jerome. It takes me a moment to place the name, but finally I do. Jerome was the librarian I met a week ago. Curious about the books he pulled for me, I take the first one from the stack and set it on the table. Pulling up a chair, I open the cover. Before I can look at the title page or the table of contents, the pages begin to flip themselves, settling on a chapter titled Solstice. My eyes skim the first page and then the next and the next. I lose myself in the words, my curiosity about the festival only growing the more I absorb. From what this chapter says, Solstice is a gathering of all four of the major kingdoms, night, day, flora, and fauna, which occurs on the week surrounding the longest day of the year. It's a renewal celebration hosted in the Kingdom of Flora, and its whole purpose is to celebrate the regeneration of life. Bitter rivalries and old enmity is set aside during this week so that all four kingdoms can meet, discuss issues of the realms, and revel together. Apparently, from a side note I found in one of the books, not attending Solstice is a pretty big taboo, hence why Malachi hounded Dez so doggedly to attend. As soon as I finish the chapter, the book snaps shut. All right. I grab the next book in the pile, this one on the Kingdom of Flora. Like the last book, this one flips to a specific page. On it is a painting of a beautiful woman with curling, flame-red hair and green eyes, vines of blood-red poppies coiling up her arm. Mara Verdana, the description beneath reads, Queen of Flora and her consort king, the Green Man. My eyes flick back to the image, surprise coating my features. There's a second person in the photo? But now that I look, there is. He just happens to blend with the green foliage in the background. Off to the Flora Queen's side is literally a green man, his skin a soft shade of the color, his hair and beard a darker, wilder hue. His eyes sparkle with mischief. I stare at the image for a long time. Mara Verdana is all bright, blooming colors, like a flower in its prime, and the green man is the thicket of shrubs and the soft, downy of wild grass. He's all the bits of plants that go overlooked and underappreciated. These are the rulers who'll host Solstice, the same ones who enslave humans. The thought unsettles me greatly, particularly because these two rulers don't look evil or unjust, just like my father didn't seem like a man who'd abuse his daughter. I push the book away. Where is Dez? I realize I've been waiting for nearly half an hour and he still hasn't shown up. Absently, I wind my bracelet round and round my wrist. My eyes move to the beads as a thought comes to me. I don't need to wait for him if I don't want to. He has a calling card that's particularly effective. Bargainer, I call out to the empty room. I would like to make...
Love.
Dez's voice is like smooth scotch, his breath fanning against my cheek. I look over my shoulder at him. His body is a wall of very appealing muscle, blocking out the rows of books behind us. He leans a heavy arm against my desk, his eyes dipping to my mouth.
Because if that's what you wish, Cherub, I'd be happy to arrange that.
He looks so thrilled to see me, his eyes twinkling. I almost feel bad for being impatient. Why did you bring me here? I ask, glancing around the room.
I assumed you'd want to know more about Solstice.
I stare at him a beat longer. It's sometimes uncanny how well you know me.
I am the Lord of Secrets.
His eyes flick to the remaining stack of books.
Oh, you haven't even gotten to the books with the really juicy information,
he notes. His eyes move from the stack to his now blacked-out canvas. He sucks in a breath.
You naughty, naughty thing, he says,
his lips curving up. He flicks his fingers, beckoning the canvas forward. He snatches it from mid-air, studying the tarnished image.
Trying your hand at painting?
He asks, raising an eyebrow. You were painting me, I accuse. Had I hoped to make him feel guilty? If so, I'm barking up the wrong tree. He sets the painting down.
Censorship, you know, is the death of creativity.
I don't care. Dez levels his face close to mine.
Oh, but if your moans last night were anything to go by, then I think you do care about creativity in all its forms.
I feel myself flush. I glance at the pile of books again. When are we leaving for Solstice? I ask.
Tomorrow.
I nearly fall out of my seat. Tomorrow? Now Malachi's insistence really makes sense. Talk about coming down to the wire with a decision. Dez pulls up a chair next to me, sliding into it and kicking his heels up on the table. He folds his arms over his chest, his war bands catching the light.
If you had read the books, you wouldn't be so surprised.
I don't even know what day it is, I say. It's not like the Night Kingdom had calendars posted throughout the palace. Or, for that matter, I continue, how many days are in an otherworld year?
The exact same number as yours.
I let out an exasperated sigh. That's not the point.
It's June 17th,
Dez says. That's also not the point. He gives me an indulgent look. Flicking his wrist, one of the books slides off the stack, drifting through the air and settling into Dez's waiting hands. I look at him quizzically. What are you doing?
Story time, Cherub, he says. You want answers, and I'm feeling particularly indulgent, so for today, I'll spoon-feed them into that sinful little mouth of yours.
I purse lips, which only causes Dez to grab my jaw and kiss me, returning his attention to the book. He opens the first cover, and the pages begin to rapidly flip.
Ah, yes, he says when the pages settle. A brief history of the four kingdoms,
he reads. He begins to narrate the chapter to me, his voice taking on a Cockney accent just for the hell of it as he explains the old rivalries between flora and fauna, night and day. I stare at him, utterly mesmerized by his voice and charisma.
Each fights for the borderland they believe is theirs, even though the Great Mother and Father spoke of the earth, sea, and sky belonging to all fey creatures. Greed was seeded at the dawn of time, and with the cycle of the seasons, it has grown in fairy hearts.
What should have been a dull read is enlivened by Dez's narration. One by one, he moves through the remaining books, taking on various accents as he does so. Sometimes it's an Irish or Russian accent, other times it's German or French, and once, to my utter delight, he impersonates a valley girl. Dez was right. Some of the later books he reads to me don't need fanciful narration at all. They are quite a bit more engaging than the earlier reads. From these later tomes, I learned that the Day King's father had a harem full of men, that it was considered a miracle at all that he fathered Janus, the current King of Day, and his now-deceased twin brother, Julius. Or that Mara Verdana, Queen of Flora, wasn't heir apparent, her older sister Talia was. However, before she ascended to the throne, Talia fell in love with a traveling enchanter posing as a minstrel. He bewitched Talia into believing the two were mates, and she gladly gave him most of her power. It nearly tore the kingdom apart. Eventually, the enchanter was put to death, and Talia, never recovering from the heartache, fell on her own sword. I stiffen when the text moves on to tales from the kingdom of Fauna, and more specifically, Carnon. Apparently, according to the author of the text, he was a soft-hearted youth.
Fear stirred in the kingdom's breast. Kind souls make for poor rulers, especially in a realm of beasts.
Dez reads. Absently, my thumb moves over the scales of my forearms.
But Carnon grew to be both soft and strong, the way a bear might be tender with her young but vicious to outsiders. Under his rule, he brought true harmony to a realm that had waged many civil wars throughout the long centuries.
Dez closes the book. My eyes flick between it and my mate.
Wait, that's it? I say. That's all it says about him? Nothing about his madness?
His madness is too recent to be included in such an old book.
How could they say he was a gentle ruler? I ask. He raped and imprisoned women.
Callie,
Dez says softly,
you and I both know monsters aren't born. They're nurtured into existence.
I know that's true, but right now there's a bitter taste at the back of my throat. History should remember him how he was. I pick at one of my scales, the book's words getting under my skin.
It will.
The heat of my anger dies down a little at Dez's words, but I can't get the image of Carnon's mad eyes out of my head.
Pretty, pretty bird.
His voice echoes in my memory. Now that I think about him, the mystery I'm supposed to be solving comes bubbling back up. Carnon isn't solely to blame. There's someone else out there doing who knows what to the missing men. And as for the King of Fauna, what of him and his blackened heart? Where had his death gotten anyone? The women still slept, and their children still terrorized other fairies. Whatever dark spell Carnon had cast, his death hadn't broken it. Death undoes enchantments? I ask Dez. He searches my face, probably trying to figure out just where my mind is at. Only seconds ago, I might as well have been carrying a torch and a pitchfork.
It does,
he finally says. Carnon's death hasn't undone the enchantment.
It hasn't,
he agrees. We're back to where we were over a week ago when I stared into those casket children's eyes and saw no evidence of Carnon's paternity in them. Only now, knowing there's more than one perpetrator out there, and hearing about the Fauna King's gentle disposition, what if Carnon wasn't behind the dark spell? Just the thought of lifting any of the blame from Carnon's shoulders has me nauseous. I push past all my hatred and all my twisted memories of my time as captive, and I try to see it through a clearer lens. When I visited the Fauna King, there seemed to always be two Carnons, one who was wild and strangely gentle, and another who was calculating and sinister. The former liked to pet my skin and whisper promises about wings and scales. The latter would force dark magic down my throat. Carnon could slip from one version of himself to the other in an instant, like putting on or taking off a coat. I might have been disturbed by the wild Carnon, the oddly tender ruler who was still very much insane, but I feared the sinister Carnon. He was both cruel and lucid. I'd always assumed these sides of him were two aspects of the same man, but perhaps there was something more going on here. Could it be possible that Carnon wasn't two different personalities residing within the same flesh, but two different beings taking up space within one body? Maybe Dez killed the primal wild man who gave me scales and claws, but not the man who was trying to subdue me with his dark magic. I can barely follow my own thoughts, mostly because the idea of two different beings residing in one body is so impossible to me. But impossible is not a term fairies subscribe to. I stare down at my scales and claws. Hell, these features should be impossible. People don't just transmutate the way I did. The longer I stare at my animalistic features, the more another traitorous thought bubbles its way up. Scales, claws, and wings are sirenic features. Even when I hated them, my siren hadn't. She'd felt more powerful than ever. And the man who brought these features out in me wasn't the king who was trying to suck me under with his magic. He was the one who'd pet my skin and mutter nonsense about my latent wings. I feel my breathing slow.
What is it?
Dez asks, reading my expression. I look up at him. What if Carnon hadn't been trying to punish me that day in his throne room? What if? I can't believe I'm about to say this. He was trying to save me. It's a wild thought. Dez leans forward, kicking his feet off the table to brace his forearms on his thighs.
Explain,
he commands. I was about to die that day. I could sense it. The whole day is rearranging itself to fit this new possibility. Carnon transformed me, and it did nearly kill me, but it also brought you to him. What if he knew what he was doing? What if he knew something was wrong with him? What if he deliberately baited you? Dez's eyes narrow.
I'm not following.
I run my hands through my hair. My thoughts are all jumbled up. I always thought there were two versions of Carnon. But what if there weren't two versions of him? What if there was a completely separate entity inside of him? Okay, saying that out loud sounds way more ludicrous than it did in my head. Dez reels back. Seconds tick by. He's not saying anything, and I'm beginning to think that my theory is grade A crap.
You think this is why the spell hasn't lifted?
He asks.
Something or someone else was living inside Carnon, and it escaped his death?
When he puts it like that... I lift a shoulder, feeling like a naive teenager all over again. I don't know jack about fey magic and its limits. Hesitantly, Dez nods his head, his brows furrowed.
It's possible.
I don't know whether I'm more relieved or frightened by his agreement. Because on the one hand, I'm happy he doesn't think I sound crazy. But on the other hand, if what I suggested is true, then there is some malevolent fey creature that can body hop. And it's still out there. Still hunting, still killing, still living. Chapter 20. The next day, the palace is in a flurry of activity. Fairies throughout the royal grounds seem to be cleaning, primping, and packing, all, I assume, in honor of solstice. What the hell is going on? Temper says when she pokes her head out of her suite, taking in the fairies rushing down the halls. Her hair is a rumpled mess, and she looks like she got very little sleep. I scrutinize her a bit more. What were you up to last night? You mean after you abandoned me to the wolves? She shakes her head. Girl, that was low. I roll my eyes. If anyone's a wolf, it's Temper. Did you kill anyone? I ask. No, but I gave that nasty fairy measuring me split ends and dandruff. Take it from Temper how to be cruel and unusual. Back in high school, she had a whole notebook of crafty little hex ideas. Temper, she was just doing her job.
She huffs out of breath. She was sticking me like I was a voodoo doll. I wanted to tell her, bitch, my family invented voodoo dolls. Anyway, she eyes me again. What's going on? Her gaze drifts back to the bustling hallway. Solstice, I explain.
What about it?
She stifles a yawn. It begins today.
What?
She squawks. We're leaving in, I reach for my cell phone before I remember that we're in the freaking other world where electronics are non-existent. If I want to rattle off the time, I'm going to have to learn to chart the stars. Ugh. We're leaving soon. How soon is soon? I shrug. I'm heading off to get changed.
Changed? Into what?
Temper is glancing around the room like clothes will just materialize out of thin air. A flower sack. An outfit. What do you think? I edge away. I gotta go. Just get yourself ready and meet me down in the courtyard. She lets out a frustrated growl, then closes her door. I head back to Dez's rooms, feeling oddly nervous about the week ahead. From everything I learned about Solstice, there will be balls and meetings and schmoozing, none of which appeals to me. And then there's the fact that I'm going to have to rub elbows with fairies who believe humans are nothing more than slave labor. This is going to be super-duper fun. When I slip back inside Dez's chambers, there's a package waiting for me on the bed, my name scrawled across it in looping script. Hesitating just a hair's breadth, I flip the lid off. Resting inside the box is a gown unlike anything I've seen before. I'm not especially girly, but I have a healthy appreciation for nice clothing, and this is so much more than just nice. The pale material glows a soft blue color. The lacy neckline plunges in a deep V. I run my fingers over the material, and it's both incredibly soft and quite delicate. Nestled next to the dress are two coiled, flowering vines, which also give off the same pale glow as the dress. Dez comes out of the bathroom then, fiddling with his own outfit, which, like mine, is made of the same luminous material. He's a far cry from the thuggish king I'm used to seeing, clad in fitted pants, knee-high boots, and a shirt that lovingly molds itself to his wide shoulders and trim waist. Topping it all off is his hammered bronze circlet. Before I laid eyes on him, I would have assumed that such attire would make Dez look less dangerous, but instead it serves to sharpen the slant of his eyes and the painfully beautiful cut of his jaw and cheekbones. Here is the monster that all those fairy tales warned me of, a man too beautiful to be real, one who rides out on dark nights to snatch up wayward maidens.
Do you like it?
He asks. I nod at him dumbly, thinking he's referring to himself, until I realize he's gesturing to the package. I drag my attention back to the dress, noticing the corner of his mouth twitches.
It's breathtaking, I say, staring down at my own outfit.
And I mean it. I rub the luminescent cloth between my fingers.
What is it?
Spun moonlight,
Dez says, looking pleased by my reaction. Spun moonlight? I repeat. I'm trying to wrap my mind around the fact that in the other world this is perfectly normal. And I get to wear this? His lips twitch again.
That is the idea, Cherub.
He steps in close and strokes away the hair from my face.
I've waited years to see you dressed as the queens of my world are dressed,
he says. I touch the lapels of his suit. Sometimes I forget that you're a fairy, I admit. It's ridiculous to think this happens to me. There's nothing about Dez that's particularly human-like, but he has a disarming nature about him that makes me forget. It's only now when I see him dressed in his fey attire that I remember.
I know,
he says softly. There's so much in those two words that he leaves unspoken. Not for the first time, I wish he'd spill more of his secrets. I pull away from him. Will you help me put the dress on? Now that I have wings, clothes are a struggle. His hands slide down my back. In response, the clothes I currently wear slide off my body, leaving me in just a skimpy pair of panties. Of all Dez's magic tricks, I'm beginning to think this one is a favorite of his.
My dress lifts from the box, drifting above me. All at once it slips downward, the material cascading over my body like water. I don't even need to lift my arms. It settles seamlessly onto me. Dez's hands smooth over the lacy material that covers my arms. "Tell me a secret," I say softly. I can hear the smile in Dez's voice when he says,
"Greedy thing, I can see you won't be pleased until you know all of my secrets."
I grin a little, mostly because what he says is true. I want to share every secret of his simply because they are a part of him. His hands slip down my arms.
"Fine. Here's one for my demanding mate. Normally you'd have a retinue of ladies to dress and bathe you."
"How is that a secret?" I ask, turning to face him.
"I eliminated that tradition the moment you came to my kingdom so that I could tend to you myself."
Wicked man. Not that I'm complaining, but now that I think about it. I raise my eyebrows and look over my shoulder. "You would bathe me?" Dez's silver eyes deepen. The answer is written all over his face.
"Would you like a bath?"
Jesus, I swear this room just got 5 degrees hotter. I clear my throat. Rain check.
"It's a deal."
A shiver runs down my back. I forget that this man will make binding agreements out of common language. Not long after Dez helps me into my dress, the two of us leave his chambers. I stare down at my outfit as I follow Dez through his palace, Malachi and more guards joining us. The tight, lacy bodice flows into a wispy, floor-length skirt that trails behind me as we walk. Those flowering, luminescent vines that came with the dress now wrap up my wrists and forearms, some strange cross between gloves and jewelry. The flowers blooming from them are the same ones I've seen all across Somnia. I run a finger over the delicate petals. They feel real. More impossible fey magic at work. We head out of the castle and across the palace's extensive gardens, each one lit up by floating fairy lights and those glass-encased sparklers.
"Callie, there's something I need of you,"
Dez says next to me. "It's going to cost you," I respond without missing a beat. He walked himself right into that one. His eyes brighten.
"You saucy thing, you've clearly learned my tricks."
He doesn't look at all upset by this.
"A bargain it is."
"What do you want me to do?" I ask. Dez looks ahead of us and I follow his gaze. Waiting in a neat, orderly line that winds through the palace grounds are rows of foot soldiers and mounted horses. The soldiers all wear black uniforms embroidered with the same luminous thread that my entire dress is made from. Behind them, sitting astride the horses, are all sorts of fairies, from royal guards to political aides to what must be some of the kingdom's nobility. Some of them hold instruments while others carry lanterns from tall poles, and still others prop up banners with an image of a crescent moon, which I suspect is the royal crest.
"I want you to let your siren out, and keep her out until after you're introduced to Mara, the Queen of Flora,"
Dez says, drawing my attention away from the sight in front of us. His request immediately puts me on edge. I can't control her.
"You don't need to control her, Cherub. You are the Night King's mate. We represent all deeds better done in the dark."
The way he says that has my stomach tightening. All right, so the dude's giving me free rein to let my siren out. I stare at all the fey men and women ahead of us, thankful for once that my glamour can't control other fairies, because if it could, my siren would consider it open season. "I'll agree to it on one condition," I say. Dez smirks, seeming to thoroughly enjoy the bargain I'm striking.
"What do you want? You already have my balls."
"Lift my sobriety." That wipes the amusement clean off his face.
"No."
"Then forget about the siren," I say with false bravado. Dez stops to pull me in close.
"Careful, little mate, how you play your hand."
He strokes my spine.
"Tempting as your bargain is, you're forgetting one simple truth."
"And what's that?"
I could simply coax your siren out,
he says, his voice dipping low. If the king of the night decides to seduce me, there's not a whole lot that can stop my body from giving in to him. Being a siren, I'm not hardwired to resist sexual overtures, especially not when they come from my mate.
You'd regret it, I say, my voice equally low.
He eyes me, weighing my words.
Fine,
he finally says, a fair bit of amusement returning to his